Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Monday, September 15th. I'm Abby Larico. This morning, two conversations to better understand this moment in our region. First, Missouri's contentious special session on redistricting and making it harder to pass some constitutional amendments is over. And STLPR's Jason Rosenbaum explains getting those two items passed required breaking traditional legislative norms.
At times, it honestly felt like I was covering the Missouri legislature in another dimension.
We'll look at the long-term impact of the past 2 weeks in Jefferson City. Then, Sunday marked a decade since the Ferguson Commission released its report on the systemic inequities in the St. Louis region. STLPR's Chad Davis reports some of the policies it recommended have been accomplished, but many others are still being worked on.
We choose that as a milestone to look back at different things, but it's not always, you know, the best measure of progress.
The ups, the downs, and the challenges since the report, that's all coming up on The Gateway. The St. Louis Board of Aldermen passed a resolution calling on Ameren, Missouri to pause disconnections for people affected by the tornado. St. Louis Public Radio's Kate Grumke reports this comes as Ameren nearly tripled disconnections last month.
In the wake of the May 16th tornado, Ameren paused disconnections, but that pause ended in August. New data shows that month the utility shut off more than 14,000 households. Now the St. Louis Board of Aldermen is urging Ameren to put the pause back in place in areas the tornado hit. Ward 7 Alderwoman Alicia Sonnier sponsored the resolution.
Right now in our city, we have thousands of people who are having to relocate and figuring out their housing situation. And one of the barriers in place is that Ameren has resumed disconnections.
The average electric customer debt is currently the highest Ameren has ever reported. I'm Kate Grumke, St. Louis Public Radio.
St. Louis appears to be on the list of cities where President Donald Trump is considering using the National Guard to fight crime. STLPR's Rachel Littman reports.
Trump announced on Fox and Friends that he was sending the National Guard to Memphis at the suggestion of Union Pacific CEO Jim Vena. Trump said Vena then told him St. Louis should be next.
He said, "Sir, please do me a favor. St. Louis has been so badly hit. It's very hard, very, very hard."
The railroad confirmed the two men met, but would not discuss specifics of the conversation. Serious crime is down in St. Louis 17% in 2025 compared to the same time last year. Mayor Kara Spencer says she is unaware of planning at the state or federal level for a deployment of the Guard to fight crime. She says federal support is needed to help the city recover from the May 16th tornado. I'm Rachel Littman, St. Louis Public Radio.
A spokeswoman for Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe says there are currently no plans to use the Guard in Missouri to address crime. For the first time since Nippon bought U.S. Steel, a Trump administration official has weighed in on Granite City Works. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick says they prevented the Japanese company from closing a plant. While he didn't name it, steelworkers in Granite City believe he was talking about them. U.S. Steel announced it would wind down processing at the Metro East Mill this fall. In an interview on CNBC, Lutnick says the federal government blocked the closure with the terms of the deal.
"It was nonsense. The idea of making people live to what they say is a smart way to do it, because otherwise, you know, once a merger is a merger."
Mm-hmm. Yep. No say.
The Commerce Department and Steel Company did not respond to requests for comment. More must be done to address historic flooding and sewer issues in the Metro East. That was part of the message delivered at a community update from the federal, state, and local government to residents in Cahokia Heights and East St. Louis. St. Louis Public Radio's Will Bauer reports.
Hosted by U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth and U.S. Representative Nikki Budzinski, the event highlighted the millions in water infrastructure projects underway or planned in the St. Clair County communities. Army Corps General Jason Kelly told the crowd they're hoping to start the next phase of construction on the Kokiak sewer system. Budzinski told reporters she'd also like the Corps to conduct a study of the region, but they'll need congressional funding.
If we do, one of the wonderful things about that, in addition to preventing a government shutdown, is the fact that we'll be able to get funding for these really priority projects that I highlighted today.
Despite the work, community members who've long dealt with faulty sewers and flooding say there's still problems, and they hope this work can address them quickly. I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
Former Illinois Governor Jim Edgar died Sunday after a battle with pancreatic cancer. He was 79 years old. Edgar served two terms as Illinois governor in the 1990s. He'd been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer in January. Governor J.B. Pritzker issued a statement calling Edgar, quote, a model public servant, a devoted father and husband, and an honest and honorable man. Pritzker said flags across Illinois will fly at half staff to honor Edgar's legacy. The local machinists union is beginning its seventh week of striking against Boeing. This after they voted down Boeing's third contract offer Friday. No further talks between the union and the company are planned at this time. The contract included a 45% average general wage increase and a $4,000 signing bonus, but no improvements to benefits. STLPR's Olivia Mizell has been following this.
The offer was rejected 57%.
Union members who voted rejected Boeing's modified five-year contract 57% to 43%. But while some celebrated, member Ken Kellogg is worried about his financial future.
I've been without a paycheck for 2 months, and it's really starting to weigh on me. I just bought a house. I'm already 2 weeks late on my first house payment.
Employees said they want faster progression to the top of the pay scale, a larger signing bonus, and a better 401k plan. A Boeing official said the company will continue with its strike contingency plan, including hiring replacement workers. I'm Olivia Mizell, St. Louis Public Radio.
A new Missouri law established the Missing and Murdered African American Women and Girls Task Force to help find ways to reduce violence against them. As St. Louis Public Radio's Andrea Henderson reports, missing person advocacy groups say the task force can be a lifesaver for people who are still searching for family.
In 2003, Theda Wilson's 9-year-old son went missing in St. Louis. Her son's father was later charged and convicted for the death of their son. However, his remains were never recovered. Wilson created the organization Looking for an Angel after her son's disappearance. It helps families navigate the missing persons process. She says many Black families encounter multiple challenges with law enforcement when trying to locate their loved ones.
There are children that are missing just because they ran or just because you think they ran does not mean that they don't deserve the attention that they are entitled to.
Wilson hopes the task force holds law enforcement accountable for the way they search for Black women and girls versus white ones. I'm Andrea Henderson, St. Louis Public Radio.
Missouri's special session on redistricting and making it harder to pass some constitutional amendments is over, but its impact may last a lot longer. St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum was busy covering the special session from all angles. He discussed his experience with STLPR's Jonathan All, starting with his impressions of the past 2 weeks in Jefferson City.
At times, it honestly felt like I was covering the Missouri legislature in another dimension. Like the fact that they passed a congressional map without making any changes in the House or Senate is unprecedented. The fact that Republicans were finally able to pass something restricting constitutional amendments from passing, and they ended up approving arguably the most restrictive version of this idea, I didn't really see coming at the beginning of the year. Even just the fact that Republicans needed to use a filibuster squashing maneuver just to pass the rules of the special session, it completely uncharted territory. And I think there's real questions about whether this is an aberration are whether this could be part of the new normal in the Missouri General Assembly.
Republicans could have done this kind of a redraw 3 years ago, but they elected not to. What changed?
I think there's a big variable here, and that's President Donald Trump. Trump has been pressuring Republican-led states like Missouri to redraw their congressional lines ahead of the 2026 midterm elections. And while Republicans in Missouri say they didn't feel coerced, are under enormous strain to pass this map, I don't really think they disputed the contention that they were doing this to make sure that Democrats don't retake the House. And it's a risky move for them. The reason why Republicans didn't do this in 2022 is because of real fears that Representatives Mark Alford and Sam Graves' districts could be competitive during Democratic wave elections. And that could potentially occur next year if the economy doesn't improve and if voters just aren't happy with Trump's administration.
Is that why Democrats are banking on this redistricting plan and the initiative petition proposal backfiring?
I think so. And I think it should just be noted that Democrats had an almost impossible task here. They knew that Republicans were going to fast track the redistricting plan and the initiative petition proposal that requires constitutional amendments that are put on the ballot through the initiative petition process to pass with a statewide vote and in 8 out of 8 congressional districts. I think they're banking on the possibility that the initiative petition plan just fails at the polls, similar to Ohio and Arkansas, when those voters rejected much less far-reaching proposals.
Even though the Republicans sent this new map to Governor Kehoe, voters could end up getting the last word. So can you tell us where we are about the referendum proposal that redistricting opponents are trying to file?
Because Republicans didn't have enough votes in the House to make the legislation drawing the new maps go into effect right away, opponents of the redistricting plan have an opportunity to gather more than 100,000 signatures in a 90-day time period to put the map up for a statewide vote. And if they get those signatures, it's very unlikely that even if this map passes, it will go into effect before the 2026 election cycle.
St. Louis Public Radio politics correspondent Jason Rosenbaum, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jason was speaking with STLPR editor Jonathan All about the end of last week's special session. Years ago yesterday, the Ferguson Commission released a report detailing the systemic racial inequity across the St. Louis region, a year after a white Ferguson police officer shot and killed Michael Brown Jr., an unarmed black teenager. The commission created 189 calls to action that reimagined the power structures with the St. Louis area and the state. It also led to the nonprofit Forward Through Ferguson. St. Louis Public Radio's Chad Davis sat down with STLPR editor Brian Moline to talk about where the region and Forward Through Ferguson stand a decade later.
So, Chad, according to Forward Through Ferguson, where does the region stand in regard to racial equity right now?
Yeah, so it's a little complicated. For one, like the data that Forward Through Ferguson has been using and that they've been trying to track has not been updated in several years. So 2018 was the last time that data was available. So they don't really have all of that information as of yet. And then you've got the pandemic, you've got the tornado, and you've got a lot of other changes where, you know, some of that data is very, very outdated.
So what policies and goals has the region achieved since the work started 10 years ago?
So one of the things that they had fought for was like Medicaid expansion. That actually did go through. There was a statewide vote. Now, there were some back and forth, of course, with the Missouri legislature on that. But that's one of the big things that they were happy with. Some of the other things include like police oversight boards in certain municipalities. That came to fruition. There's even like other community policing initiatives that have passed in other municipalities. So that's some good work that they were really happy that went forward.
And on the flip side, what does Forward Through Ferguson say are some of the challenges they face?
So big challenge, those equity indicators have not been updated since 2018. So without that and without some of the funding that goes with it, they don't have the most accurate numbers as to what things do need to change within the region. There's been a lot going on with the tornado, with the pandemic, that those numbers aren't the most up to date. There have been battles as far as like the Missouri legislature when it comes to trying to make sure that the Medicaid expansion still goes through. So there's been that issue as well. And then one of the other things, too, is that, you know, 10 years is an arbitrary number in a lot of ways. Like we choose that as a milestone to look back at different things, but it's not always, you know, the best measure of progress. So it takes a lot of time for things to go through. And then, of course, there's funding, which is a big thing with Forward Through Ferguson and a lot of other organizations, a big challenge that they're going through.
Yeah. Speaking of finances, Chad, the St. Louis Business Journal recently reported that Forward Through Ferguson laid off staff in the last week. Is the organization in some financial trouble?
I was talking with Anissa McCaskill, the executive director, and she said that the cuts were really hard, of course, but with those cuts, they do think that through the end of 2026, they should be okay. But then, you know, now maybe they have a fighting chance in 2027. But still, you know, she was talking about like it is a challenge. And a lot of other organizations, whether they deal with racial equity or arts organizations and other groups, are kind of dealing with similar problems where a lot of large groups and foundations may not be contributing as much as they once used to, especially like 5 years ago after George Floyd was killed and 10 years ago, of course, since Michael Brown was killed.
So finally, Chad, does Forward Through Ferguson think the region can eventually reach these goals? And if so, how does it get there?
189 goals. That's always been a lot of goals to accomplish. They're working with the Urban Institute as well, doing community surveys to try to figure out kind of like where we stand now with the 189 goals. And McCaskill did want to emphasize that the organization itself is okay. They're facing challenges like other groups are facing as well. And, you know, they're going to continue to fight, whether it's through legislation and through other initiatives to try to get a lot of these things through.
That's St. Louis Public Radio's Chad Davis. We've been discussing the Ferguson Commission 10 years ago yesterday, releasing a report detailing systemic racial inequity across the region. Chad, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Chad was speaking there with STLPR editor Brian Moline. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this has been The Gateway.